Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gospel Tech Podcast. My name is Nathan Sutherland. Gospel Tech exists as a ministry of Flint and Iron, a nonprofit Ann and I started a few years back, focused on sparking positive purpose in youth. And Gospel Tech's focus is how can we help families better love God and use tech. So if you are a parent or a grandparent or even a kid who's using tech, and if you have family members who are using tech, this podcast is for you. Our hope is to really equip you with the tools, the information, the resources, the confidence you need to go out there and help your kids really fight for them in the world of tech rather than just with them about it. Today's conversation, so this is episode 9, talking about how do we reestablish our tech boundaries. And today we're going to be talking about, all right, I've heard a lot about smartphones. I've heard a lot about technology. I've heard a lot about what we can do to kind of stem the invasion of it. But let's say I've already given my kid a smartphone. What should I do now? And that is what today's episode is dedicated to. Your kid's already got a smartphone, right? Maybe you have a second grader with a smartphone, or like my son, right, in kindergarten last year with a kid in his class with a smartphone in class. All right, like what do we do next? Like that bridge has already been crossed. Or maybe you have a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old, right? Like what do we do with the smartphone that's already been given, right? We can't put the toothpaste back in the container, right? That was the analogy I was given growing up for my decision. So what do we do next? My hope is today's conversation is going to be encouraging. It is going to be, I think, insightful and hopeful, but it's also going to have some reality checks in that process. So with that idea, I guess let's get this conversation started. Welcome to the Gospel Tech Podcast, a resource for parents who are feeling outpaced and overwhelmed as they raise children in a tech world. As an educator, parent, and tech user, I want to equip parents with the tools, resources, and confidence they need to raise kids who love God and use tech. Okay, so today we are talking about what happens if I already gave my kid a cell phone, what do I do now? But before we get to that conversation, want to just kind of do some general housekeeping. The first is thank you to everyone who is listening. That's been so encouraging. That's amazing. I love the questions you guys have. I love hearing your stories about what is helping, what you're finding challenging, what you'd love to hear more on. Those are all awesome. And you might have noticed we don't have any, I can't even think of the word. People who pay money, ads or sponsors, there it is. Literally don't have them, can't even think of them. And Ann and I are really excited about being able to do that. We do this because we want families to be encouraged, not because we want to have products sold to you. So in an attempt to keep that going, one of the ways you can help us continue to do that is by rating and reviewing and sharing this podcast, because then we get to continue doing this as a ministry to others. And that is an amazing blessing to us because it lets us do what we want to do very well. So thank you to everyone who has already left a review, who's rated right through whatever app you use, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or whatever you use, Anchor. So thank you for being a part of that. And thank you to everyone who's just commenting and engaging. If you want to reach out to us, we're on Instagram right now at Flint and Iron, on Facebook at Sparking Purpose, or you can just email me, nathan@flintandiron.org. So feel free to reach out in those ways. Also, want to just give a quick shout out for the Gospel Tech Online Workshop. That is officially live. And basically what that is there's actually two sections. The first section is kind of how do we address technology with our family? So how do we know if our tech is healthy? What can we do if it's not? What do we mean when we say tech? And it walks through tool tech and drool tech. There's a workbook that goes with it. You get a PDF along with the purchase of the workshop. And we have a physical copy. I literally was writing the printer today about the delivery of those. So we're going to have physical copies for those of you who like the old analog version. I appreciate that myself. So that's the first part. The second part then is building a family tech framework. So we go with basic ground rules, and then you actually will talk through, guided by questions in the workbook, what are we going to do with our tech time and where, the place and the content and the priorities, and how do we address safety in areas like bullies and accidental porn exposure and social media and the music, right? Like how do we deal with all of that information, and how, instead of just giving you a rule book, I'm actually helping you guys create your own family kind of playbook. How are we going to get through this tech conversation together? So when we talk about, we want to help equip families to fight for each other, not just with each other, about tech. Like, that's literal. That's actually what we're doing. And the Family Online Framework, you can just go to gospeltechworkshop.com and you'll actually be able to see it. You can preview it. You can watch the first kind of introduction, see what the workbook looks like. And we're super excited about that. Yeah, so check that out. And that's really all the housekeeping for today. So let's jump straight into this conversation. When we are talking about what does this look like? I already gave my kid a phone. I think I want to just kind of harken back to way back in episode 24. If you go back to that, we talked about why your child doesn't need a smartphone. So spoiler alert, that's kind of the basis we're starting from. And I won't run through the whole conversation, but I think if I were to sum up the gist of it, there's lots of downsides for a smartphone for a young adult, and there's very few upsides. The downsides far outweigh the perks. And in the words of Jonathan Haidt from NYU Stern School of Business, no smartphones before age 16, right? And that, I think that idea is generally where I line up. If you were to ask me, hey, should my kid have a smartphone? Not before 16. They can have a phone. It will help them be safe. There's some wonderful communication aspects to that, but they don't need a smartphone. And if you want more on that, you can go back to the other episode. But I think that's kind of where we're starting. But there's a lot of parents feel a lot of shame and condemnation. Like, well, so one of the ones I hear a lot is, well, they live with their dad half the week or every other week, right? And then the dad gave him a smartphone and I don't want him to have a smartphone. What do I do, right? Like, I understand that there is reality. Or maybe that's really what they wanted last Christmas. And then over the course of the last year, you're like, wow, that seems to be getting out of hand. Or it was fine pre-quarantine. And now it's been 8 months of isolation and building up bad habits. How do we reestablish tech boundaries, right? Like, that's where we're coming from here. So while my stance is generally don't start there, right? That's not super helpful if you already got it. So let's go here. First would be start with actually last week's episode. Go back to episode 8, just pause right here, go back, and we talk about the difference between accountability and control. And I want that to kind of be the groundwork. If you haven't listened, it's super helpful for what I'm going to say next, because otherwise it's going to sound like here's a list of how to control your kids. And that is not at all the heart of what I'm doing. I'm building this conversation today, assuming you heard last week's conversation. So first thing you do, listen to last week's. We talk about accountability is hope focused and control is fear focused. And we are called in Christ to be hope focused. So go listen to that. Then second, if your kid already has a smartphone, make it a dumb phone, right? It is a phone. Make it just a phone. And I think the idea behind this is we're really trying to remove those things that can be negative distractions. How can we best enhance and really get our kids to get the most out of the phone? Make it a phone. So if they really want the look of a smartphone, make it a Gab phone. Gab Wireless makes a phone that looks kind of like just it's not going to look like an iPhone 11, but it looks like a smartphone, right? It has a screen, has little app icons, but it has no internet. It has no ability to download apps, right? Like, it is just a phone and it will function and it will keep them safe. And that's great. So go with that if you need to. But the idea here is really taking four steps. The first is make the phone grayscale. I included in the notes to this podcast, you can go down and find a 45-second video that tells you how to make your phone grayscale. And if you need color for like using maps or something, there's even a direction in there how to triple click the power or the side button. Used to be the power button, but the triple click the side button to make it go back and forth. But keep it grayscale is the idea. The second is turn off all notifications. I posted a 30-second video on how you can do that. Take the email off. If your kid has email for school or whatever, like, take that off, make it check from a central home computer during a set time of day, whether that's during school hours or during a certain time of day because it's needed. Totally get that. And then remove all social media apps, right? Check those from a central home computer during a set time of day. Now, that might sound crazy, those four on making your smartphone a dumb phone, but I've actually done these for the last 4, maybe 5 months. I don't actually recall. What month am I in? October? Yeah, so going on at least 5 months now. And it's actually been amazing. So grayscale is actually a super bummer for a while. You're going to have to get used to it, but it's a bummer in the best way because I found I was looking at my phone for kind of a pick-me-up. I just wanted to see those Skittle-colored pictures pop up. And it turns out 4K is not a great escape when it's all in grayscale. The second thing is I actually have ring through on my notification. So I get no pop-ups of any variety for anything, text messages, phone calls, voicemails, anything. But if my wife, my in-laws, or my parents call me, it'll actually ring through even if my phone is muted, right? Like, even if it's on silent mode, all of that stuff, it'll still ring through so she knows she can reach me in an emergency. So if my phone rings and I'm giving a talk, like I literally will step off the stage and take that call because there's only three sets of people who can reach me and they're calling me and they know that that rings through. They know that's a big deal. So I would strongly encourage that. It allows you to prioritize what you're doing. Focus on what you're doing right now and then go do whatever else is popping in, right? If you have a smartwatch, turn off the buzz. Please, for the love of the humans in the room, turn off the buzz. Don't be checking that thing every 3 seconds. I know it's only for 3 seconds, but it's 3 seconds out of every minute. And that's a big deal with your attention, your focus, and the value you're giving the people around you. The third is set a time of day to check your work emails and your social media, right? And so on those, I've mentioned that before, but like literally, so with Anna and I, it's kids go to bed, we go downstairs and we take a half hour. We go, great, right now, we're going to do social media. Right, we're going to jump on our computers, we're going to go online, and we're going to check what people are saying, get back to people, scroll, right? That's our time. I will say, caveat on this, because of my job, being on social media is a way of we're letting people know we're doing stuff. So I only use it during work hours. I do actually have the app on my phone because I can't, anyway, can't post from the desktop in all the ways I need to be able to. So just full disclosure, I do have it. I use it during work hours and I don't scroll. So that's my personal accountability. So I've done this making a dumb phone. It is not a perfect process, but it is a way to at least set a wider margin so that you have a little bandwidth to say, hey, am I being healthy with this? Is this going the way I want it to go? Like I can at least think about my tech, and if it's not healthy, I can take a step back because I already have that kind of dumb phone buffer built in, which is great. The third thing we can do. So if the first is go back to last week's episode, so we understand hope versus fear. The second is let's do a dumb phone. The idea behind making it a dumb phone isn't because I'm scared of your phone. It's I love you. And these smartphone features aren't actually phone features. They're smart entertainment features. They're smart engagement features. They're ways to get you to use your phone more. I love you. So I'm going to help you get this buffer, right? It's hope focused, even if it is a restriction. There are times we restrict harmful or distracting things because they're not going to be helpful. The third then is set a family tech framework. And what I love about this, this is actually what I started off in the introduction talking about. So it's gospeltechworkshop.com. Is literally the goal of this is to help the family understand what are our expectations, what does that tangibly look like, how are we going to do this, and everyone gets to have a voice in it. So we start with ground rules, right? What are the general expectations, and what loving next steps will happen if those expectations aren't met, right? If we don't keep our timeline, if we aren't healthy with our choices, if we don't do the things online that we've been acknowledged that we need to do or not do, right? And then when can we use it? So we select a time, we select a place. Where is our technology being used, both in our house and outside of our home? What content will we engage, listen to, watch? What are our priorities, right? What are our family values? And are those scheduled intentionally, or are we just kind of letting our priorities happen? And we often default to what's easiest, which is often a smartphone or whatever technology it is, but in this case, smartphone. And six is safety, right? We're going to make sure we have those upfront conversations. So if my child has a smartphone that I have provided them, or even my other family members have provided them, right? Then how am I going to go about ensuring their safety because I love them? So I'm going to have to make sure we've talked about depression, suicide, pornography. We're going to talk about bullies. We're going to talk about some major kind of world political events, right? That is very much on TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram. Social media is awash with talking about the world and the state of the climate and the state of politics and the state of COVID. And we need to make sure we're having those conversations with our kids because they're getting information. We need to talk to them about major world religious beliefs because that is a huge topic on YouTube and social media influencers is their faith or lack of faith and their ideas. And we need to make sure that our kids are having a space to talk about that. So the family framework helps us do that. Now, just kind of an example of just how this works. I love family frameworks because they're so hope-focused. They really focus on our kids' potential, our love for our kids, and that being the basis for our standard. I was an avid gamer growing up, and I vividly remember I was in the, we had a computer upstairs in the main hallway. And my dad had gotten a new computer for the family. My buddies and I were playing on it, and Doom had come with it, original Doom. If you're not familiar with the video game, you're a space marine who is fighting demons from hell, okay? But with 1990s graphics. It's still actually pretty grotesque and gory, but it was very exciting to us. We were playing it. My dad walked in while we were playing it, and we're literally, like, I mean, blowing things up with shotguns and stuff, right? Like, it's gruesome. He watches for maybe 2 minutes, and then he presses eject on the computer, back when you needed a CD in the computer to run the game. He presses eject, takes a CD out, snaps it in half, drops it in the garbage can, and walks away. And what I love about that is we never actually talked about it, like, afterwards. Like, there was no follow-up conversation because we didn't need to. I was very aware of the family expectation. We had had conversations on what was appropriate, not appropriate, right? I was very aware that I had been caught breaking the rules red-handed. And my friends and I just decided to go ahead and move our play outside. we changed locations. But what I need you to understand is that was not a threatening action for my dad, right? Like, I did not picture myself as the CD and my dad, like, glaring at me and snap it in half. He was impassive as far as facial expressions, right? I knew for a fact, though, that I had both disappointed him and that I had broken an agreement that this computer was common use, that I could play video games, but that I had to play games that lined up with the family expectations, what my dad expected of me, but also what God expected of me, right? And it was very clear that this was not something that we had agreed on. It was okay. And what was super cool about that is literally that was the last time I ever played Doom. Like, even now, as an adult with children of my own, I have not played any other versions of Doom. And the idea behind it was really every time I got a chance, every time my friends brought it out another thing, I was like, you know what? Like, there are a lot of games that are super fun. I know for a fact my dad hates that game. And just because I love my dad, I'm not going to play that. Like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it for me to have fun breaking my dad's trust again, right? Like, I know how he feels about it. And that common expectation of framework allowed me to not see that as a threat or my dad impinging on my freedoms as a young teenage male, but instead me going, man, like, that really wasn't the good choice. Like, I went into it knowing it was bad. I got caught red-handed and there was no berating, yelling, grounding for a year. Like, the game got broken. Keep in mind, my dad did not smash the computer. Right? He simply removed the opportunity to make the bad choice I was making. And it was very thoroughly made, right? Like, snapping the CD in half is a good way to do that and send a clear message without causing any physical or emotional harm. So I just guess when we talk about family framework, to be in a spot where if you had to break something, right? If you have to delete an app or remove something intentionally, your kid isn't going to take that as a direct assault on them. I never once questioned my dad's love for me. I didn't just think he was out of step with technology and he just didn't get me and my friends, right? It was a clear understanding. This was the family framework. My dad is fighting for me, not with me. So really the idea behind that framework is you and your kids, you're going to be able to self-monitor. You're going to be able to self-report. Like, man, I made a mistake. I'm not going to run from my dad because I'm worried about getting caught. I want to take that to my dad. I want to take that to my mom, right? I want to talk to them about this bad thing that I did because I know they love me and they're going to work for my good, not just for their good and try to, like, make me feel bad about it, right? That's what a family framework does. So that's why that's the third step. We do, if your kid already has a smartphone, they need to know you're on their team. Not just, oh, we're in your corner, we'll support whatever you do, but we're on your team. We're fighting for you. And if mistakes are made, we want to help you stay as healthy and as vibrant and as focused on God as you can be. And sometimes that means taking things away, but it's always out of hope and it's always out of relationship. So family framework's the third part. Fourth thing we do then is we assess health. So once you have a family framework and everyone's on the same page and everyone's fighting together for each other, not just with each other, fighting together is kind of ambiguous, together fighting for the hope they have in Christ, then we can assess our health, right? And we've talked previously, but this is big about a reset where we look at our relationships and responsibilities, our enjoyment, our sleep, our emotions, and our time. And we go, okay, does the tech we're currently using on our smartphones impact any of those? Does it increase or decrease, or I guess not impact, but impede? Does it get in the way of our relationships and responsibilities? Am I on my smartphone when I should be doing something else? As an adult, I can tell you, my phone impedes my making of dinner and my attention to my family if I'm not being intentional with it, right? I have to literally drop it in a drawer when I come inside the house, right? So I'm working in my office, I go inside and I have to put it away. Because if it's sitting on the counter, it, like, taps the back of my brain every time I scan the room And I see it. I'm like, oh man, I wonder if that email came in. Oh man, I wonder if that message came in. Oh man, I wonder if that person's written me yet. I wonder what's happening just generally on the interwebs, right? Like I just get things that I want to do. So it impacts my ability to be responsible and to be relational. How about your enjoyment, right? Is it drawing your kids away? Is it impacting your sleep? It definitely is if it's in their room or your room, right? When you're sleeping. So that's going to be something you have to address. How about your emotions? Is it your high highs and low lows tied directly to access to that phone? And how about your time? Are you able to put it away to keep time limits? I've had a young lady in class who literally showed up in class with a flip phone with a pop socket on the back of it. And when I asked her what was going on, she wasn't very quick to tell me, but eventually came out through a friend that, hey, she was told to put her phone on the counter, supposed to be there kind of like a bedtime for a phone. And instead at night, she had taken it, left just the case with the cord, like sitting inside it, if you can picture that. And mom flipped it over, saw it, went inside, and sure enough, 1 a.m., girl's on the phone, right? So phone goes away, she's given a flip phone. And I love that because mom goes, hey, listen, you're not able to manage your sleep and your time at least. That's then impacting your emotions and your responsibilities. So we've got four of the five right there, and we are lovingly going to remove this. We'll still give you a phone. We want you to be safe. She played soccer for school and for a select team, right? That's fine. You can still do your sports. You can still have this phone so you can make sure you can contact us if sports change or if rides change, whatever. That's fine. But you don't get this because you've shown you can't manage it. And so out of the framework, we now get an ability to relationally say, is this healthy or not, right? And I am always get pushback with this when they go, well, all my friends are online. I would challenge that. I had a young man who was engaged with a lot of young friends online, but his engagement with his friends took away a lot of his joy, right? He started getting really, really morose and very moody, not just because he's a teenager, but like directly in relation to he was either trying to get online or he was coming off time with his friends online, and that was causing dissatisfaction in the real world with the real relationship, specifically with his parents. He was losing sleep because he was staying up later, waking up earlier, and he was fighting with his parents all the time, not just about tech, but just about everything became a fight, right? Family dinner became a fight. Doing schoolwork became a fight. Doing that sport that he had signed up for became a fight. And it was always about getting back, well, my friends are online. And I would argue that if that's our friend group and we can't have joy in life, is that a friend group worth having, right? Like, I do think there needs to be a cultural shift away from we're going to make friends who have a similar focus on hope and joy that we do, who don't just simply settle to the bottom of, well, this is the easiest place to meet friends, so I'm going to go there, but we intentionally reach out, right? I'm going to go call the friends I want. I'm going to text the friends I want. I'm going to try to set up, I know it's COVID and this is super hard, but even if it's a phone call that is now pace of real life, one person having an intentional relationship, that's different than I'm scrolling through a ton of feeds from a ton of different people, some of whom I'd consider friends, and we're just kind of in this, I don't know, hormonal soup of emotional interactions that don't necessarily get to the level or the scale that we need it to. So I would just say, just because there are people you consider friends online right now, isn't the only reason to stay there. Invite those friends to come with you. And that you might find the hard news that some of those friends are just friends of convenience. They're there because you're there. And as soon as you go away, they're not there for you, right? They're there for the convenience, for the common interest, not for the relationship. So assess that relationship and think about how can you make some analog relationships that will happen at the pace of real life. The fifth thing we can do when we're talking about, well, I already gave my kid a phone, what do I do now? Is we assess that health and then we remove the things that aren't helping. So the fourth was assess. The fifth is remove if it's not helping, and there's definitely a time to do that, right? It's not, I guess to just emphasize, it's not punishment. This is not, hey, you've disappointed me, now I'm going to come after you and quote unquote teach you a lesson. That's not the lesson kids learn, parents. If we go and try to humiliate them, or we try to really make their lives miserable because, man, you made this bad mistake and I just need you to learn a lesson, right? We read the Proverbs about sparing the rod and spoiling the child, kind of to paraphrase it. And we go, well, that's right. It has to hurt or they won't learn. And there certainly is learning that happens with pain, but we're not always in control of what our kids are learning from that pain. So I would say this. Make sure that whatever happens, if you're removing tech, that it is done clearly, that is done in the context of a family framework, like your kid understands these were our family expectations, this is where we're seeing it break down, either on a reset, like we are intervening, you don't see how you're unhealthy, but we see it and we're intervening, or hey, remember that rule that we all had, and here's the clear infraction that draws this next step because we love you, right? And we're coming down to Matthew 5, 29 and 30, that if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. It's better to go to heaven, to love God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and be effective for the kingdom, and then to be whole and pursue your own wisdom, right? That is basically where we're going to leave that conversation for today. But that idea of we want to make sure that we are doing this out of love, that your kid has a smartphone, so do they have your trust? If they've got your trust, then I think making it a dumb phone and taking those kind of precursory stances. By the way, making a dumb phone, we're talking kids under 16. When you get to 16, we need to start talking about, I think the dumb phone idea is still good, but when you get to 16, that's where you're going, all right, 16, 17, 18, this kid's going to be an adult. What's the conversation? Are you going to wait till they're 18 and they can buy their own? Are you going to start to introduce it? Hey, look, an example. That ring, my friends, means that Anna's calling me right now. One moment. And so useful to have that resource available. Anna was calling because she's had a super long morning at a co-op for homeschooling that one of our sons is going through and is basically on a complete sugar crash. So she was calling saying, I need food as soon as I get home, which is useful. It's the reason we have the ring through function. So even though my phone's on mute, I got a call while we were doing this. Look at that. So timely. All right. So we were just talking about how we remove the out of love and out of hope. It's not punishment. Matthew 5, 29 through 30. All right. In my own life, I think the best example I could give would just be from, I used to be an avid gamer, as I'd mentioned, but as an adult with a master's degree, a wife, a house, a career in teaching, I was coaching sports, and my gaming was out of control, right? Out of 97% of the week, I was doing great, but 3% of the week, I wanted my time. I had worked hard for this. I deserved it. And it would really frustrate me if I didn't get to game on a weekend. And specifically, if the time I'd set aside, like, well, Anna's going to go to bed at this time, this next event's going to happen, and then I'm going to game from A time to B time. And it started to impact my joy, and it started to impact the way I prioritize my time in the week. And I found that it actually became kind of the pinnacle of my week. I was getting through relationships and through responsibilities so that I could get to gaming. And I loved gaming, but I hated myself afterwards, basically, right? Like I would finish gaming and go, man, that was such a waste of time. I promise I'll do better next time, right? And I ended up kind of having this prayer of, man, Lord, like help me not waste time. Help me not waste opportunities. Let this not be too big of a problem for me, right? Let me just be a great husband, father. Like I didn't have any kids yet, but a future father, mentor. I want to be a good dude, Lord. Amen. And God challenged me in a loving sermon with these words that I'm going to pass along to you. The pastor was talking about addiction and he said this, if you're asking God to help you manage your sin, you're praying the wrong prayer. God doesn't manage sin. He kills it. Right? That's some truth bombs. That was 9 years ago, and that was the last day I played a video game. And for me, the removal was not, well, I have to do this in order to love God. God knows and knew that I loved him. And he simply said, do you love me? Like, be faithful to this. Like, I have good things for you. That is getting in the way, right? For you, Nathan Sutherland, gaming is too much. Now, for me, it was not social media. For me, it was not watching shows and movies. Frankly, I generally loathe watching shows and movies. Like, generally, there are a couple of good ones, but that's just, it was never a thing for me. I would much rather play a game, but those games were well out of proportion, right? And the Lord said, please give me that, right? I love you. And here's what happened. With that time, a direct result of that was I started volunteering with a local community group called Young Life, right? And I started teaching young people and realized, man, I don't just love teaching. That's not actually my passion. My passion is seeing kids reach their full potential and specifically their potential in Christ. Because apart from Christ, these kids are just burning themselves ragged. They've got straight A's, they're varsity athletes, and they're crying themselves to sleep tonight, depressed because they know they don't deserve this good life. I want those kids to have hope. And that led Anna and I to starting a nonprofit, which then led me directly to speaking to you through this microphone right now. Like that's where the Lord went. And that's what I'm passionate about, right? Is seeing that happen in other people's lives. You don't have to start a ministry, right? You have to be faithful with the next step God's asked you to take. And anything that gets in the way of that is worth removing. So that's why we remove, but we don't just remove. I didn't just take away games and then sit around for an extra 10 hours a week moping about my boring life. I replaced it with amazing things, right? I replaced it with something that allowed me to create. That's the first thing we do. So this is number six, by the way. If part five, what do we do with the phone we've already given? We remove the unhealthy stuff based on the family framework and the reset. And then we replace it with awesome stuff. Make it stuff they can create with, right? So they're the ones initiating the idea that then changes. That's what's happening right now with the podcast, right? This is a passion I've got. I'm now conveying it to you thanks to this technology. Let it focus on their gifts, their interests, and their passions, right? And then let it happen at the pace of real life. That's often going to be social and relational. So in my life, gaming got replaced by volunteering, and that got turned into both writing, which I had never written like for fun. And that's like this crazy side project I've got now going where I'm writing. Like, I've never dreamed of writing before, but I'm doing it and it's super fun. And I don't know if it'll go anywhere, but like, it's a hoot. And the second part became my full-time job. Like, speaking and working with young people is now what I do for a living. And that's crazy. And it's a direct correlation from making that space and replacing it with something awesome. I had a young man who cut out his video game streaming, right? So I guess his viewing of streamers, specifically gamers. So he wasn't doing the streaming. He was the one watching it. And it was so in the way of his health and life and sleep that it was a major impediment. He dropped it and ended up going to nationals in a college sport, right? That he'd almost quit because of his tech use. I had a different young man whose parents took away his console, sold it, and actually use that money to purchase him activity opportunities. For him, it was snowboarding and some sports equipment, right? 2 years later, that young man is in middle school, and he says he's the happiest he's ever been, right? He still doesn't have his console back. He is very happy. He doesn't have a smartphone anymore. He is very happy because he can be so much more present, and he can be so much more joyful because it's not tied to his technology anymore. And so in those cases, we replace, and it's awesome. And I think just ending with this idea that removing and replacing is all about hope. It's not about fear. So I think I'll tie this in with my teaching experience. So in my classroom, I had really three expectations. And these expectations, this was kind of my class framework. They were not out of my desire to control. They were out of the hope I had for every kid. These expectations were first that everyone can learn. If you showed up today, you can learn. Right. In fact, I was convinced you will learn and am convinced that every kid is learning. The concern is, what are they learning? And is it worth making a permanent part of who they are? The second part of that framework is that their little choices matter. That in class, I'm going to ask every kid that day to make a little choice that's going to help them become more of who they can be. Right. Generally, the one I would pick is ask a question. Just today, all you got to do is ask a real question, something you don't understand during class today. Right. The third is that it's never too late to be great. You are not too broken. You are not too far gone. If you've got breath in your lungs, there is still potential for you to be great. And I think starting with that framework, then I can walk through and literally would be able to walk through with kids. Hey, here's where the expectation based out of that. So I plan my lessons accordingly. Let's look at this, right? So when we're talking about hope, how does that impact? I'm going to go about my job differently because I have hope for every kid. I believe they all can learn. They all showed up. So that's going to impact the way that I teach. The second is it's going to impact the way I manage the classroom. Now, napping is no longer an offense to me. Right? That's a medical distraction. I'm going to send that kid to the nurse if they're napping. There's something going on. Maybe they're not eating enough. Maybe something's going on at home. I'm not just going to let that kid sleep every day. Right? That is something I can intervene in and get that kid help and support because I care about their learning. My room is not to be napped in. We're going to learn here. If you really need sleep, let's go get you the help you need. Talking, phones, those are now environmental distractions. They're not offensive to me. I'm going to relocate them because that's an environmental distraction from what we're here to do, which is learn. Rude and inappropriate behavior is now a behavioral distraction, right? It's not an offense to me as a human being, which means you're going to remove that distraction. So if the kid's refusing to participate in a healthy way, kid, you're now going to step outside of the class. You're going to go get support, right? Sometimes in school suspension or something like that would come in. You still have work to do. You're still going to learn, and you are welcome back here the moment you are ready to participate, right? Like, that's great. I want you here. 100% of the time, I want you in this classroom. but I can't have you here if your entire intent is to blow up the classroom emotionally, right? Like, I need you to be participating in what the class is doing, and you owe it to the other 33 kids. Now, you hear the way that's all hope-focused. I'm not trying to drive the fear of God into these kids. I'm not trying to scare them into doing stuff. And literally what happens is kids will de-escalate quicker. They'll be more willing to hear me out, and they're willing to at least try, right? I'm not saying it worked with every kid every single day, but when it didn't work, or when I guess things didn't work perfectly, like that gave us the best step forward, is that when we're talking about, all right, well, I have a smartphone already, and how do I go about helping my kid, man? Keep that hope focus, keep that family framework at the front, and fight for their potential and keep that what you're driving for. So now when something goes wrong, man, we're going to remove this, not because I'm mad at you, but because I love you. Right, we're going to limit this, not because I'm scared of it, because I have hope for you and I see that that's harming you, right? The reset now makes sense because it's, hey, here's these things that you're amazing at and this is detracting from it. The replacement activities are all because, man, that thing we removed lowered who you are, right? God made you a certain way. You've got these incredible gifts and talents. Let's focus on that. So I literally had a kid show up in class. First day I had him, second semester, arms crossed. This kid was mad. Like just an angry, abrasive human. Arms crossed, literally verbalizing, this is dumb. When am I ever going to use this? This is eighth grade language arts, folks. Like, we're not like really hard drivers here. So this kid is really upset that class is going on. And this is unique. I taught for several years at this point. I was like, I've never had a kid do this. Like, this is odd behavior. So rather than just kicking the kid out, which I very much could have done if you read classroom expectations, like shouting out in class is generally frowned upon. Making derogatory comments about teachers and their content is generally frowned upon. It's bad for motivation. Let's just say that. So I started asking her, I'm like, hey, like I've got this kid I hadn't had for a semester. What's going on? Well, it turns out, eighth grader, right? It turns out he failed English and social studies in seventh grade and first semester, but aced math and science. I'm like, all right, so we already got, like, I know every kid can learn, but they just have different ability levels in different areas, but this kid can learn, right? Like, that's not the problem here. So what is the problem? Well, then I started getting assessment data from him, and it turns out he read at a fourth grade level. So for at least 4 years, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, going into eighth grade now, halfway through eighth grade year, he is still reading at the same level. And it's a really good chance that before that, even he wasn't reading at level. So for at least 4 years of this 14-year-old kid's life, he had been telling himself every day, I can't do reading. I can't do reading. Look at that test score. Look at that assessment. Look at that other thing for years, right? Like more than a quarter of his life had been training himself. I can't read. So of course he crossed his arms and said, this is dumb. What did we do? The first thing we did was go, all right, I need you to know that you can learn. And he basically just, whatever, right? Second thing we do, we're going to find little ways for you to get success. So it's not do this whole assignment or you're going to fail. It's, hey, do this question for me. I want to see how you can do on this one question because all I need to do is see something. Can you do this or is there another skill I need to go back and teach you? Right? And the third thing is it's never too late to be great. Let's find ways to get that greatness out. Let's find that passion. He loved math and science. I got the librarian. She found some amazing books for him and it ended up his dad read with him every day for the rest of the year. And he gained 4 reading years worth of skill by the end of the school year. He doubled his state test score, right? And it's not because English was a magical experience for him. It was hard. He didn't love it every day. But we found that spot where we were able to focus on hope, right? I knew he could learn. I focused on the little choices and I found ways to get that win, right? To find that greatness. And I think that can be directly applied when we look at our kids and our family. We don't have to make this a knockdown, drag out brawl. Now we have to have standards. We have to stand by those standards and it won't always be fun. Our kids aren't going to go, wow, father and mother, how I loveth you, right? Like they're not going to write poems about how incredible we are. They will probably go on some tirades, but making sure that it's set up in a way that is loving, that is intentional, that is directed with their future and their potential in Christ. So go, man, you've been made for a purpose, son and daughter. You've been made by a God who loves you. You've been uniquely equipped for good works, Ephesians 2:10, right? That God has given his Holy Spirit to you so that you can look more like Jesus. And the more you, like Jesus you look, the more like you you're becoming, right? The you that's designed to be, the you that's going to cross that veil eventually and see Jesus face to face. That's who I want you to be. This thing this relationship, this music, this content, this technological escape is not helping that. And so I love you. We're going to remove this, but we're not going to be vindictive. We're going to replace it with another opportunity, right? Another adventure, another chance to do something. And I'll just say this right now, I guess. It's not going to always add up in the level of excitement that occurs. I can tell you video games are still more exciting than basically every other activity in my life, right? Like, it just is. A video game is designed to get you in all the good feels in the brain, right? And it's rapid, and it's stimulating, and it's engaging. And you can still break a sweat even just watching a game, right? Like, for me, that's still a place where I know if I went and played, I would still love it. And yet, I intentionally give that up because I know what I'm being given is an opportunity to love others more effectively. And I have no time in my day, right? Like, out of 24 hours in a day, I don't have time for games. There's not like a time where I'm twiddling my thumbs going, man, I wish I could game right now. Like, I've got stuff to do. And games aren't a part of that. So for me, I'm giving that up. And that's what we want our kids to see, right? Like, your potential is so great that you don't have time for the stuff that's going to waste your potential and make you a consumer, not a creator. So I think just that idea. So to reiterate that last point, when we're talking about these tech conversations, we keep them focused on hope, not fear. When we're removing and replacing, it's because of the hope we have in Christ, of who God's making us to be and the work he's called us to. And when we get negative habits or negative tech use, it distracts us from that. Now, we're not as able to love. We're not as able to forgive. We're not as able to repent because we have these bad habits and these basically areas of rebellion where we're not trusting God. So we keep that at the forefront, and then we trust God to do the rest. So in conclusion, you've given your child a smartphone. Let's review what we just learned. You've given your kid a smartphone. Now what? First thing we do is we go back and we listen to that last accountability versus control conversation. And that talks about like actually some of the apps you can use, like some of the things you can do for this but the why. Why can we do it out of hope with accountability and where we're pointing them versus control and making the decisions for them. The second thing is we're going to make it a dumb phone because we're going to keep it a phone. We're not going to make it a mobile entertainment platform. Then we're going to set up a family framework so everyone understands the expectations so that when intervention occurs, there's not anger and frustration to the extent of feeling personally attacked. When my dad broke that video game, when he snapped Doom in half, I didn't go, "What? I can't believe it." Like, I knew what I had done, right? Like, thanks, Dad, for not berating me in front of my friends. That was very gracious of you. Just snap the game, drop it in the garbage, walk away, never talk about it again. And we have that, right? So because we know it's a family framework. We're aware of the expectations. A reset can now come out of that, the assessing your health based on who you can be. Then we remove what's not helping. We replace it with stuff that is, and we keep hope at the focus. Not, man, there's lots of scary stuff, so let's avoid it. But hey, that scary stuff is actually a detriment to your hope. And that's why we're taking this action. So I hope this has been helpful for you. I hope that it's encouraging for you. And I hope that as you walk away from here going, man, I already gave my kid a smartphone, or someone else gave my kid a smartphone, and now I'm living with it. I hope this gives you really practical conversation points. I hope you listen to this with your child and go, man, I want you to hear this, not so that Nathan can speak to them, but now you have a conversation about what I said. They don't have to agree with all the words coming out of my mouth. They have to be able to talk to you as their resource, as their parent, as the individual given to them to raise them up in the way they should go. They need to have that open conversational start. And I believe the Gospel Tech Framework is a wonderful way to do that. GospelTechWorkshop.com is where you can check that out. And that's entirely designed to help you fight for your kids in a tech world. So if you have any questions, you can reach out to me at Nathan@flintandiron.org. Again, on social media, it's @SparkingPurpose on Facebook or @FlintandIron on Instagram. And as we are going to continue this conversation, we're going to keep talking actually to a couple kind of pros in the field, authors and writers who are doing work in this area and that will continue to help us answer the question, how do we better love God and use tech?